The church's music from the 20th century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
You would think that with an annual opportunity, lots and lots of people to talk to, and a long, long history, the media would be able to get the facts about the Southern Baptist Convention and its annual meeting and what they're doing there and how it fits into the structure of this. Do you call it a denomination? Usually we do call it a denomination, although technically it doesn't really fit that category either. You'd think with all that opportunity, the news would get the facts right, but the Southern Baptists have met yet again in Dallas, 10,000 plus strong down there. They're messengers, as they are called, not delegates. And there's some factual errors in the media coverage of what they're discussing, in particular, the clergy sexual abuse crisis. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about media coverage of the annual meeting of the Southern Baptist Convention, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Why can't Southern Baptists just handle their part in the sexual abuse scandal at the national level like so many other denominations can?
Well, I think the easiest way to address that is not to contrast the Southern Baptists with the Catholic Church, which is what I think a lot of journalists try to do. But back up for a second. Let's contrast the Baptist with the Methodists. I'm going to ask you here a question in a minute or two here about the Missouri Synod Lutherans, so know that your time is coming. In the United Methodist Church, who sets the standards for ordination of a minister? The United Methodist Church. Who licenses that minister? The United Methodist Church. Who appoints that minister at the local church, working with a local committee, but the ultimate authority to appoint them there, that would be the bishop, you know, of the local regional conference level of the United Methodist Church. Who owns the property of that church? The United Methodist Church. Who ultimately holds any trust funds, endowments that belong to that local church? Well, they don't belong to that local church. They belong to the United Methodist Church. In other words, you have a true hierarchical denomination in the technical sense of that word. Now, let's run through those same questions with the Baptist. Who ordains a Baptist minister? A local congregation. Who is in charge of licensing them and, yes, reporting that they've ordained somebody to the national church or to the local church, the associational church or whatever, associational network? Who licenses them? The local church. Who hires the minister? The local church. Who owns the property, the endowments, the insurance policies, etc.? The local church. Why are they called a Southern Baptist church? Because they voluntarily choose to associate with the Southern Baptist Convention, usually through all three, but not always, through their local association, a region. My father used to be the associational missionary for all of North Texas, a rather big region with a lot of Baptists in it. The regional or local association, Then you have the state convention. Now, in our divisive age, there are states that are so complex and divided that they have more than one state convention. The state of Texas has two Baptist conventions. One calls itself moderate, the other more conservative. They don't always get along. They both relate to the Southern Baptist Convention to one degree or another, but they're all still Southern Baptist if they choose to be Southern Baptist. And then at the national level, you have the Southern Baptist Convention, which legally only exists while it is in session every summer for like 2 days. During those 2 days, they appoint committees that have the rights to run various agencies on behalf of the convention. But the churches don't have to support those agencies. They don't have to support the foreign mission program or whatever. It's totally autonomous local churches choosing to affiliate with the regional, state, and national branches of Southern Baptist life. It's very hard to get kicked out of the Southern Baptist Convention, or at least it used to be. It's getting easier, which is what this whole story is about. Now, the thing that I think most journalists don't understand is what I just ran through sounds like an incredibly complex bunch of political structure, right? Like corporate structure. The thing to understand is for Baptists, the belief that the local church is the center focal point of the New Testament theology and doctrine of the church, that is like one of the foundation doctrines at the heart of what it means to be a Baptist. So if you start saying, oh, the Southern Baptist Convention should handle this whole abuse thing from the top down, and have the National Convention should have the ability to order churches to do the following stuff and to decide who's a pastor and who isn't a pastor and register the pastor and rank the pastors and keep up with who's being good and who's being bad, you're actually asking the Southern Baptist Convention to change its theology of what the church is. Now, did that make any sense?
Yeah, I think it made a lot of sense.
It's not just the Baptist. I believe the Assemblies of God are similar. And in America, Lord knows, we've got thousands of completely, totally independent evangelical and charismatic congregations all over America. Now, it's my understanding that we're going to have the same sort of thing happen when some of these issues start being applied in Islam and in several branches of Judaism, where basically the local congregations are autonomous. And while their rabbi or imam might be licensed by somewhere, I think the local synagogue or mosque are in charge of hiring. So I think we're going to have some similar congregational, that's the big term, congregationalism, the free church theology. I think we're going to have similar problems, not just with Baptists, but with many of the growing sectors of American religion are in independent congregation model networks. I mean, Willow Creek, for example. Who had the authority to tell Bill Hybels he was wrong? The answer to that is his own board, which he probably played a major role in selecting. Who's above that? Who's above Bill Hybels?
Nobody.
Nobody. And the same thing is true at countless megachurches all across the United States. So I think that just like a lot of reporters don't understand that the Southern Baptists don't have delegates, because that would mean, once again, that there was too formal a structure, they're messengers, you know, and boy, do the Baptists care about that. And then they don't understand, I mean, that right now, at this point, the New York Times still hasn't corrected the fact that it has, in at least two stories I've seen so far, has said that all of these votes were held by pastors, that only pastors can vote. Well, man, that would get you kicked in the shins at the Southern Baptist Convention real quick And most of the people kicking you would be women. I mean, when you're at this convention, there are a lot of lay people there. Depending on their size and the level of their giving to the denomination, voluntary giving to the denomination, a church can have up to 12 messengers, and everybody gets at least two. And back when I was covering this thing at the ground level, back in the great Southern Baptist Civil War era of the first half of the, into the middle of the 80s, back when you would have like 30,000, 40,000 people at these conventions, the overwhelming majority of the people there were lay people. And that's the way Southern Baptists roll. I mean, this is not an ecclesiastical organization in the way that we normally think of it.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. We're talking about media coverage of the annual meeting of the Southern Baptist Convention. We'll turn to the coverage of the New York Times after this.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
The church's music from the 2nd century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The 6th century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Greetings in Christ, and thank you for listening to Issues, etc. If you ever find yourself visiting the Smoky Mountains in East Tennessee, please join us here at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Sevierville. We see it as a small part of our service to the church to provide sound liturgical worship opportunities for vacationing Lutherans to our area. For worship times and directions, please visit our website at splctn.com. That's splctn.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
I'm delighted to be chairman of Preach the Word Project, a project of our synod to strengthen the preaching of all of us pastors in the synod. We know how eternally important that is.
Issues, Etc. regular guest Dr. Carl Fekencher talking about the new Preach the Word Project.
So we've put together a program of 12 modules that will be coming out this year and over the next 3 years on a variety of preaching topics for pastors to do together with two other pastors, two guys they trust, two guys they feel comfortable with, written materials and very fine video quality materials that are now becoming available.
Preach the Word helps pastors work together to improve their preaching with several resources and by interacting with seminary professors and fellow preachers. Find out more at lcms.org/preachtheword. lcms.org/preachtheword. Preaching is challenging business. We all can use some fresh ideas. lcms.org/preachtheword. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of the annual meeting of the Southern Baptist Convention. Terry, let's walk through some of the recent reporting on the Dallas meeting at the of the Southern Baptist Convention. You had mentioned earlier the New York Times.
Well, I mean, they got a lot of facts right here. And I think the most important thing is that they have taken an action that, quite frankly, I'm surprised they've taken. And that will require us to get back into this three-level thing and do a little bit more explaining. For several decades now, we have had cases where local Baptist associations have decided to, the big word would be, break fellowship with a congregation over a controversial issue. The big one for the past couple of decades has been the ordination of women. So thus, you had associations in the United States that did not allow their churches to ordain women, even though those churches would say, wait a minute, we're independent, autonomous churches. You can't stop us from ordaining this woman as a pastor. And the local association would say, you're right, we can't stop you, but we're not going to let you be in our fellowship, in our association. And then that sort of action got kicked up to the state level. Lately, we've seen at least one or two states say, okay, you can't be in our state convention if you ordain gays and lesbians, or if you do something else that breaks what we consider to be Baptist theology on that issue. Now, in the background, you can hear liberal Baptists over the centuries shouting, wait a minute, who gets to determine what Baptist theology is? Priesthood of every believer, sola scriptura, we're all in this as individuals. I mean, you can hear Bill Clinton saying, I've got my Bible. I get to decide what sex is. Nobody gets to tell me what sex is. I'm a Baptist. You've got this kind of fierce independence that normally is trumpeted by liberal Baptists, and it's the conservatives trying to rein everybody in. Now, what's intriguing about the current situation with the press is now we have the National Southern Baptist Convention saying we're going to set up a rules committee, and if you're not following the following procedures on sexual abuse, or if we find that you've been accused of this and it turns out to be true, that your minister or someone in your care at your local congregation, that you have violated these standards, we're kicking you out of the Southern Baptist Convention. We can't force you to do something. We don't have that power over you, but we can break fellowship over it. We can say you're outside the tent. You think you're independent? Now you're really independent. Frankly, I was surprised that the Southern Baptist Convention did that. And I think that's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. You could make a case that it might give some bad church leaders an even bigger incentive to hide. But I think the SBC leaders have decided they're going to have to risk that. So they've set up, and they're working. This was the first time they've shown these new recommendations, these new standards. The Religious Liberty Commission rolled out several documents of how they would like to see victims treated, how they would like to see churches automatically report to the police. I think that was one of the standards, and several other things in there. Now, there are some big issues lurking here. Is it, what if a local church, as a local autonomous church, decides to require all of its members to sign a membership covenant in which they sign away their legal rights to sue the church, or to even sign away their legal rights to file a police report and charge someone affiliated with the church with a crime? And that would be breaking your membership covenant. I think that you're going to see a lot of discussion of that issue in the future. When I was a Southern Baptist, growing up Southern Baptist, blue chip Southern Baptist in Texas, I like to joke I was a first round draft pick of the Southern Baptist establishment. I have never heard of a covenant of this kind at a Southern Baptist congregation, let alone one that had legal implications. But you could immediately see that there might be Baptists who would say, oh, we think it's a theological issue whether someone can sue the church or turn us into the police, as opposed to working with their Christian brothers and going through a church-based process of mediation to be reconciled the way the New Testament says we should be reconciled one to another. You can see that people are going to make those theological points. That's going to be a very important and interesting debate here in the coming years.
So this question that you entertain in some of your recent writing, why so much tension focusing on Roman Catholic clergy abuse as opposed to, say, Southern Baptist clergy abuse, is part of the answer there that as a journalist, I not only have a hard time understanding what those Southern Baptists are doing and their structure, but they don't have bishops. The Roman Catholics have a face I can put on this scandal.
Exactly. I get to make one phone call, I call up their press office, and now I'm covering, quote-unquote, my regional, state, local story by calling this one press office. The other thing you got to understand is follow the money. This was one of the big points that I wrote about this week at Get Religion. Follow the money. When lawyers get ready to sue for sexual abuse, you look at something like the Roman Catholic Church or the United Methodist Church or the Episcopal Church, you got something to sue. You've got a denomination with massive insurance policies, lots of property, massive endowments in many cases. You look at the Southern Baptist Convention, where as much as we focus on megachurches, the typical Southern Baptist church is somewhere between 100 and 400 people. And that sanctuary is not worth even $1 million. Who are you going to sue? Well, they're not going to get a whole lot of liability insurance or whatever coming out of that small local congregation out there in a suburb or in a small town somewhere in America. Can they sue the National Baptist Convention, Southern Baptist Convention? Well, obviously, that's what they want to do. But legally, there are no structures that allow them to do that because of the way this convention is organized. It's set up where the money and the authority and the ordination standards, the hiring and the firing is at the local level. Now, let me point out one thing. The Southern Baptists do have some structures. It's my understanding, I could possibly be wrong on this, but I don't think I am. If someone alleges sexual abuse by a Southern Baptist foreign missionary, someone who works for the International Mission Board, I think you'd be in a position to sue the International Mission Board because that's who licensed and who employs that missionary. And I would be stunned if the International Mission Board of the Southern Baptist Convention doesn't have liability insurance to help with that kind of a situation. But even the International Mission Board is a voluntary program in terms of whether local churches support it. Well, again, does that make sense? Now, Missouri Synod Lutherans, who owns the local church?
It is the local congregation.
You're a congregationalist at the local level.
We are a very strange and often awkward hybrid.
Right.
Of congregationalist. And to put it in terms that probably most easily understood, there are episcopal elements in terms of theological accountability, but in which is very, really very structured. And it works about as well as it does any place else, to tell you the truth. But in terms of properties and monies and even legal liability, it is, we're on the congregationalist side of the teeter-totter.
Okay, so the pastor is licensed by the denomination?
Yes.
Who hires the pastor?
The local congregation.
Does the bishop have the ability to say yes or no on that hire?
On the very initial assignment out of the seminary, what we'll call, for the sake of argument, our bishops meet together and they serve as a board of placement, and no one is expected to say no to those placements. So, but from that point on, they can, through certain mechanisms, nix a guy, but it's really, really difficult to do.
Okay, so I would think that if a lawyer, have y'all had sexual abuse allegations in cases, and have they successfully sued anybody other than the local church?
Yes, they have.
Okay, well then you've got enough of a system of authority that they've been able to tie it to regional or to the national?
They have only gone as far as the regional. I think there's some sort of layer of insulation against the national, but the national church body gets sued on these things, or at least attempted to be sued all the time. Yes.
Now, it's my understanding that would be, ironically, y'all are seem to be organized a little bit more like Presbyterians. Because, I mean, it sounds like you've got like a regional or presbytery buffer going on there between there and the national convention. And, of course, in the Roman Catholic Church, you can't sue Rome. You sue the local diocese because the priests work for their bishop. So Rome has a buffer, and there is no national American Catholic Church. So you can't sue that because it doesn't exist. So you sue the regional diocese. It sounds like, to some degree, y'all have what functions sort of like the Catholic structure. Now, the Methodists are a real kettle of fish because, you know, the Methodists, the bishops appoint the clergy. And I once had a Roman Catholic archbishop lean back in his desk and crack up laughing, and he said, "Oh, my gosh, I wish I had as much power as a Methodist bishop." I think most reporters would assume the Catholic bishop has more clout than a Methodist bishop. But in terms of controlling what goes on at the local church level, that Methodist bishop has more power than maybe anybody else in American religion.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of the annual meeting of the Southern Baptist Convention. When we come back, we will turn to the Religion News Service coverage.
Church music directors can find a new community at Prelude to Postlude, the CPH music blog. Learn helpful tips for managing music ministry and involving members, and meet the composers of some of your favorite new pieces. Plus, find suggestions of music to use for special services, and preview some of our newest works with free samples you can use at your church. Visit us at preludetopostlude.org.
If you appreciate Issues Etc., talk radio for the thinking Christian, and Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world, please include a bequest in your will or trust for these worldwide media resources. Bequests aren't subject to federal tax or capital gains taxes. Ensure your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren the opportunity to listen by including a bequest in your will or trust for Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During June, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you. Good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
From fast facts to FAQs, overtures to offerings, get the inside scoop on the upcoming National Convention of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in the June issue of The Lutheran Witness. Special pre-election coverage includes biographies, personal statements, and interviews introducing readers to each of the three men nominated to serve as Synod President. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Terry Mattingly about media coverage of the annual meeting of the Southern Baptist Convention. Terry is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. Terry, let's talk about the Religion News Service coverage. I would expect that, in at least in this case, to be the gold standard.
Well, that varies from story to story, but in this case, you're dealing with Adele Banks, who has been at RNS and has been covering the Southern Baptist Convention, a decade or two. So Adele, at this point, knows her stuff. It shows in her reporting. They've got a professional, trained religion reporter with years of experience covering not only the Southern Baptist Convention, but she also is very experienced at covering the various African American denominations, which are interesting mixes of Baptist life and then what functions as kind of Episcopal mainline Protestant life. And then you've got something like the Church of God in Christ, that massive and very undercovered Pentecostal denomination, which you have bishops, but then you've got local church, you've got hybrids. This is why I try to tell people, you really need professional religion reporters who only need to be briefed on stuff like this once and may even keep folders full of FAQ documents on some of this stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if Adele has a folder someplace with a marked up copy of the Southern Baptist bylaws. I mean, she's covered the convention so many times. So this is one of those religion stories that really separates out the professionals from the people who are trying to learn. The image that I used in the podcast the other day and wrote a post, follow-up post about it, that thing about sending American football reporters to cover soccer, that, you know, the more I play with it, that's not a bad image at all for what we're dealing with here. When you walk into these different denominations, conventions, independent churches, movements like the Willow Creek movement, when you're Hillsong is a movement, you know, et cetera, et cetera, you've got to know the rules. You have to know who the players are, and you have to know how they're playing their game. Otherwise, it is really, really easy to get lost.
Did you also recently write about the Louisville Courier Journal and how they were reporting on this?
Let's see, which one was that? The Courier Journal, the story about the state convention?
I believe it was, yes.
Yeah. Well, that's an example of what I was talking about a while ago. We had local associations beginning to kick churches out because of doctrinal issues. I believe I'd have to find that post and look it back up immediately. I believe the Louisville Courier Journal was covering a state-level conflict over LGBTQ theology-type stuff, and that was a state convention that took action against somebody. Yes, the Kentucky Baptist Convention. I was able to scroll down and find it. So once again, you got three levels, associational, state, and national. So what we're seeing now is the Southern Baptist Convention is trying to get itself the authority and set up the rules to be able to break fellowship with congregations, independent, autonomous congregations, that the leaders of the SBC don't think have a healthy, constructive way of dealing with the victims of sexual abuse. This method of breaking fellowship kind of started at the associational level. It climbed up to the state level, and now we have the national convention saying we're going to break fellowship with you over what we believe is behavior that doesn't fit our theology. And by the way, they're doing the same thing with race. If you're not handling racial inclusion according to a set of certain standards, they have said, we are now declaring that a theological issue at the heart of the gospel, and we will kick you out if you're not following the certain standards for racial inclusion. So this is a really interesting time and a very complex story.
How important is the question from a journalist on that very subject? What does it matter if a congregation is disassociated from the Southern Baptist Convention?
You know what? That's the really sad part about this. The big movement in our nation seems to be toward these totally independent congregations. People were beginning to talk about the post-denominational age, that Americans didn't want to be a part of churches with structures and authority and bishops and all this other stuff. I would say after the Jesus movement and the charismatic renewal movement of the 60s and 70s, the momentum seemed to be with the totally independent church. But at some point, you kind of get what you pay for. You're really trusting those local church leaders to behave in a way that's going to be healthy for you and your family, to be consistent about doctrine the way you think they should or they told you they would. So turning a Southern Baptist congregation into a totally independent congregation, there are a lot of pastors out there that would just say, okay, throw me in that briar patch. I am glad to do that. There are a lot of churches that have taken Southern Baptist off their sign. They no longer consider that to be a positive thing. I mean, there are churches like Saddleback, leaps to mind in California. They've never hidden that they're a Southern Baptist congregation, but they have never put it on the sign out in the rather large front yard and trumpeted to the world that they're Southern Baptist. Rick Warren certainly would never deny it. And he is a Southern Baptist in terms of what he supports and how he behaves himself on a lot of issues. But in terms of helping people in the pews and ultimately helping victims, to some degree, kicking them out of the Southern Baptist Convention and making them independent, at the local level, that could make the whole situation even worse. But millions of Americans don't seem to care about that. They want to be a part of those independent churches, and they feel they can trust those pastors. And that's a shaky situation in some cases.
You have also, here with about a minute, recently noted Al Mohler has been saying both into and to his own church body. There's probably a very small group of Southern Baptists as well-known as Dr. Mohler. What has he noted for that denomination?
Well, going into this convention, he wrote what I thought was a brutally frank essay on why the Southern Baptist Convention has been slowly losing some members. They've lost about 8% of their membership in the last decade, decade and a half, as opposed to a lot of mainline churches that have lost somewhere between 30 and 60%. And I think the quickest way to answer that question is to flash back to an interview that Al Mohler did with Rod Dreher about the Benedict option. And toward the end of that interview, Rod kind of said, do you think that American evangelicals have the theological thickness, the theological rigor to do something like the Benedict option? And Al Mohler said, no, I don't think they do. I don't think they have enough explicit theology and enough doctrinal credibility or commitment to try to pull off something like what Rod has called the Benedict option. So I think to some degree, Al Mohler is trying to sound a warning siren that the days of ordinary Baptist life, the days of comfortable cultural Christianity, where everybody wanted to join the local Baptist church in Dallas because that was good for business and it was good for everybody. Dr. Mohler is saying those days are gone. You're going to have to know what you believe, and you're going to have to be able to teach it to your children, and you're going to have to be able to defend it because you're living in a more hostile age.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, talk with you next week.
Glad to do it.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss a Vatican document on gender theory in education with Pastor Heath Curtis, and we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore, thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
What makes Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, Illinois so special? Our new members talk about the family atmosphere, the welcoming people, and the outstanding music. But most importantly, you'll be confronted with your sin and comforted with the assurance that Jesus has removed that sin so that you can live each day as His baptized and forgiven child. Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church is at 612 North State Street in Freeburg, Illinois. Sunday worship is at 9 a.m., Sunday school and Bible classes at 10:20 a.m. Call 618-539-5664.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
I'm talking with regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb about a new book by one of his former professors. Which one, Ken?
The late Dr. Kurt Marquardt, and the book is The Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People.
You edited this book.
Yeah, the unpublished manuscript was among Marquardt's papers, and it is vintage Marquardt, lively, engaging, centering in the Christ who saves, with an apologetics chapter at the end.
You can find out more about Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People at lutheracademy.com.